Blog Talk Radio.
I can't help but when I look at you, you're nothing but American dream. Oh, 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 oh. It's my dream.
And welcome back to Life Lessons Radio. I'm Rick Tokini. Our very special guest today is Dr. Sophia McLennan, and she's written a wonderful book called Is Satire Saving Our Nation? She analyzed the increasing power of satire in shaping political discourse and public opinion. Sophia, welcome to Life Lessons.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you on. We are great fans of comedians like Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, and we understand the role that their shows have had in informing the public and in offering kind of a counter to mainstream news media. Tell us about why you wrote this very timely book, Is Satire Saving Our Nation?
Well, one of the answers is because a lot of my research had been on much more depressing stuff. So it was fun to focus a little bit on how comedy works with politics. But the sort of serious research question was that it became clear that after 9/11, the news media wasn't really doing the job we needed it to do in terms of being a watchdog for the public. And suddenly, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert were not just informing their viewers, they were doing it through satire, which is a pretty fascinating thing to observe. And it turns out that their viewers were more informed on issues than, say, folks that watched typical news programs. So it was sort of trying to understand exactly what was happening with that process and what it meant for our democracy.
Excellent. And if you were to answer the question, is satire saving our nation, is it? And to what extent is it actually a saving device?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the important thing to remember is that you have to deal with the circumstances that you have, you know, and the reality is that, you know, after 9/11, we didn't just have a news media that wasn't kind of doing the work we needed it to do, but we also had a growing political polarization that was increasingly making political progress difficult. And we had a public that was largely disaffected. And satire actually did and still continues to play a very positive role in getting the public educated on critical issues and energized to connect and participate in the political process. So the basic answer is that, yes, satire is helping save our democracy. It's unfortunate that it has to play that role, but within the context that we're in, it's a very productive force.
Do you think that there's a point where a satire, especially from one of our favorite shows, Saturday Night Live, becomes detrimental? And I'll give you an example. If the average millennial were to be asked today what they remember about Sarah Palin, they probably would say, I can see Russia from my backyard, straight from Saturday Night Live.
Well, the Tina Fey impersonation of Sarah Palin is one of those singular examples where we can really draw a direct cause effect between that impersonation and sort of the end, certainly of her career as a vice presidential candidate. Some would say that was a good thing because Sarah Palin was woefully inexperienced and had absolutely no business being on that ticket. The interesting thing about SNL, as I'm sure you know, if your listeners love that show had really not done a whole lot of political comedy. And it was, in fact, Tina Fey's version of Sarah Palin that had a really big impact on bringing politics sort of back into the SNL lineup. The other thing you mentioned that's important is that, yes, it's an impersonation, and she made this sort of off-the-cuff comment in, you know, in her role impersonating Sarah Palin that was not a comment, right, that Sarah Palin mm-hmm. herself had said. And so the thing we have to worry about is, do the impersonations sort of put ideas in the mind of the public that are unfair or inaccurate for the characters they're representing. I think in the case of Palin, it's true that it was inaccurate, but it wasn't unfair because she had already said a lot of really similarly silly things on the campaign trail. So in that case, I don't think we think of that as a negative example.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's so interesting to hear your perspective on it. don't you think that as we look back in history now and do it with a keen eye and have some new perspective on it, that the years that we went through with the characters like LBJ and Richard Nixon now in comparison pale to the exploits and the comedy that's taking place in our White House today?
Oh, well, that's 100% true. And in fact, it's the subject of the book I'm working on now, which is really dedicated to Trump era satire, which is a whole sort of another version of this. One of the things, well, there's a lot of differences, but one of the things that's very, very, very different about the satire landscape is, in fact, sort of the rise of digital and social media, which means that it's not just possible for a political figure, say, like Donald Trump, to directly and immediately communicate with the public and therefore doesn't need, you know, the news media as a filter. But it's also possible for citizens to talk right back to him. And we've really never had that before. And processing what that means for, again, public debate and the health of our democracy is something that's a significant challenge. And then there's the other piece of it, which is that so much of this online media is, say, you know, not just, say, potentially generated by, you know, Russia or people from all over the world, but it's also produced by bots, right? Artificial intelligence is another major part of the story, which means it isn't always actual people who are writing back to Donald Trump on Twitter, and figuring out what that means for our democracy is also really important. So, you know, a hashtag can trend, and we've now got data that shows that sometimes those hashtag trends are completely manipulated by, you know, digital means and not by actual people tweeting these things. So this is all a really kind of quick moving landscape. And what we do know is that it's been satire that's done a very good job of sort of cutting through the bluster of Trump's rhetoric in ways that the mainstream media doesn't seem to be able to do.
Very good. I want to get your perspective on the following. I want to read something that we picked up recently in the news, and I'd like for you just to comment on it. In the coming years, it said that success or failure for the big media companies will increasingly be determined by the ability to create a direct two-way relationship with the consumers. And this whole flow has led Disney to acquire the means to deliver premium content to a mass audience, allowing them the freedom and flexibility to lessen reliance on the traditional cable distributors. The reason why we want your comment on this is because it's almost as if, because of the speed of information, the speed of news, that everyone is trying to get information faster, and that the consumer is becoming king in that, and long gone are the days of dependence on Uncle Walter Cronkite to provide us the news of the day. We're getting it when we want it, where we want it, and how we want it, even if it's delivered by Samantha Bee or Stephen Colbert or Jimmy Fallon. In the midst of all that change, what is your observation based on what I just read regarding the consumer being the king?
Well, I mean, you're 100% right about that change. And I think, again, one of the things we're noticing is sort of the generational distinctions between how citizens are accessing news and information. There still is a sizable percentage of the population that actually watches Fox News on TV live. that generation is older. And as they die off, what you're describing, which is the far more sort of consumer-centric model, is going to dominate. There's no question about that. What we don't know yet, though, is what's going to happen with all of these, like I said, sort of these AI-generated influences on what's happening, which is that you can now make, you can kind of inflate, say, how many people have read an article or how many people have seen a video by creating fake accounts and making those fake accounts watch these things. So that's one piece of the story that we're really trying to sort out, because it used to be the case that, you know, somebody would say, oh, this video is viral. And we understood that to mean that actual people had seen it and therefore we should take a look. So what's going to happen is this has been an incredibly quick-paced shift, which was that it used to be driven by the consumer, as you pointed out. But now it's also driven by artificial intelligence and bots and trolls that are manipulated. So what seemed to seem like power, right, to the consumer and the people, let's say, is quickly eroding into a story where we're not really always sure that it's actual people behind this. And so figuring out what that means for how citizens get information in the future is really one of the question marks we're trying to determine, right? So it isn't just that you might read an article that was produced, you know, by someone trying to manipulate you because they're kind of keying into your predisposed beliefs. It's also that you may think you're reading, you know, you're one of many people who've read this article, but you're not. So again, from a kind of how that transitions into what it means in the media space, we're still trying to sort out, because the reality is we won't probably be able to eliminate all those forces, those sort of dark or, you know, manipulative uses of the media.
That is so interesting. Sophia, we have got to have you on some future shows. We love your commentary, and I want to end today with this question, and I think that it relates to, is satire saving our nation, your book. Will future candidates for president need to be different from the perspective of having the capability of laughing at themselves because of what we've currently going through and how America will respond to more of a humanistic approach, and people that are able to find levity in their own lives, but also kind of lead us with truth and integrity?
Well, you know, that's a really excellent question. And what we know is that it was actually the beginning of television, which shifted things. You know, folks older like me might remember what happened with the Nixon-Kennedy debates. That was the beginning, right, of needing to be charismatic and likable in a different way in order to win. The issue of how you deal with comedy particularly is pretty well documented. We now know that if candidates refuse to go on these late night comedy shows, they simply are unlikely to win. So one thing we can track with, you know, fairly detailed, you know, accuracy is that those candidates who can go on the late night shows and interact and have some fun and lighten up are much more likely to raise money and to succeed in their campaigns. So that's the beginning of it. It's interesting, of course, because Trump himself doesn't seem to like being made fun of, although he certainly was a good sport with Jimmy Fallon. So again, historically, you know, presidents get quite a bit of comedy at them. And you're also right that the, you know, in general, those people who can take the joke are more successful.
That's right. Sophia, thank you so much for being on our show. Your book is great, is Satire Saving Our Nation, and we really appreciate the discourse that you've provided to us, and it's an important read, and we welcome you back anytime onto our show, Life Lessons.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me.
You are most welcome. That was Dr. Sophia McLennan, and go out and buy her book, is Satire Saving Our Nation. It's a wonderful analysis of the increasing power of satire in shaping political discourse and public opinion. I'm Rick Tokini. Thanks for joining us on this special Life Lessons. As we always say, keep talking, keep laughing, and listen more intently. Have a good one.